Yes, it is. It's Health Naturally, and I'm joined by Dennis Stewart. Hello, nice to have you here.
It's very nice to be with you, my dear.
Thank you very much. Now, Dennis, for the last two sessions, you've spoken about herbs that represent the Western herbal tradition. Mm-hmm. You've dealt with slippery elm and yes. golden seal, and yes. you've briefly touched on the American herb echinacea.
Yes.
But today you want to deal with echinacea's fascinating history and its supreme importance as an infection fighter and an immune stimulant.
I certainly do. There would be few herbs that have the history and the reputation as echinacea. Remarkable. Love to talk about it.
All right then. Well, we'll get to that. And we've got Mick from Edgeworth on the line. Hi, Mick. You've got some feedback on some Java kidney tea.
Yeah, I just wanted to let Dennis know through a bit of advice listening to his segment on the show about 3.5 years ago. I have kidney disorder and I'm been losing and had very fluctuating kidney function for about 15 years. And then upon trying the Java kidney tea, I've now gone to 3.5 years of totally stable kidney function with no losses. So I just wanted to say thank you and just give him some feedback.
Oh, thank you, Mick. That that makes this program worthwhile. The introduction of Java kidney tea was something that will probably be one of my last most significant introductions to Australian herbalism, because as the name implies, it's not a traditional Western herb. Java kidney tea is also known botanically as Orthosiphon stabenius. Not that that would mean much to you, but the name Java kidney tea indicates the fact that it is a herb that comes from Malaysia, Singapore, and that area around that. In the native area, it's known as Cubus kuching. And probably over a decade ago, I became fascinated with the spectrum of Southeast Asian herbs that I was studying, and I found confirmation in the Western work written by Dr. Rudolf Weiss that Java kidney tea had in fact developed a reputation based on its Javanese history, but also by virtue of the fact that that knowledge was taken back to Western Europe, particularly to Holland, keeping in mind that the Dutch were settlers, if you like, for many hundreds of years in that part of the world. So I was intrigued with it and needed something other than what we were using that might be useful in helping the failing kidney, as I call it. And so I began to prescribe the herb as a simple herbal tea in its traditional form, nothing very flash. And one of my first results was a lady from the coalfields, an elderly lady who was in a very, very sad state of kidney function and who was already being prepared, basically, for dialysis. I prescribed, with her doctor's understanding, Java kidney tea, and she stayed on that preparation for about 8 years. And that saved her, in her case, I'm not saying in every case, but in her case, that stabilised her retreating kidney function and allowed her to get on with the few remaining years that she had as a very elderly person. That was a great initial case that encouraged me to see that it lived up to its reputation, particularly in people that are not being offered too much from the mainstream for a kidney that is in significant decline. Subsequent to that, over the last, 8 or more years, I have recommended via this program and certainly via my consulting rooms in Newlampton the potential benefit of this remarkable herb. We really don't know. There's no science yet, even in the European literature on it, and it's called up in some of the European pharmacopoeias. There's no significant chemistry or explanation, like many herbs, by the way, as to how it does its job. But I have many people on my books, many people stay with it, and I don't know too many that haven't seen some indication of benefit. Now, would it be beneficial in all cases? of the failing kidney? Probably not. But what I say to people that go onto it, by all means, it's a harmless herb. There is nothing in the literature to say that it interferes with any other medication. Let your doctor know or your pharmacist know what you're doing. Monitor your kidney function tests via your doctor. And I would be most surprised, Mick, if you are not the only person that has had benefit taking it. I'm so pleased, Mick, that you've done well on it. And you've made my day, because you know that I would get a lot of cynics referring to what I say, even in my program and in my rooms. But it's conversations like this and feedback like this that indicate that there are many, many breakthrough potentials in traditional medicine, and you're a classic example of it. Thank you for ringing, Mick.
No, not a problem. And, yeah, thanks for the advice. And, yes, my function, I'm under the renal clinic in John Hunter, and my function has been stable for 3.5 years.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Dennis.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your call, Mick. We appreciate it. And we've got, let me have a look, Sam from Wall's End on the line. Hi, Sam. Thanks for holding.
Thank you.
Your friend's got some hair loss issues and she's a vegetarian. Yes,
that's correct. Good. She's 100%. Good afternoon, Mr. Dennis Stewart. I've heard so much about you. From this person. You
probably
are
all
an
wrong.
Angel.
That's probably
You're an
all
angel.
Wrong.
You're an angel.
Oh, dear.
Yes. Now, she's known you for 35 or 40
yes,
years.
Yes.
She's a bit shy to ring up.
Oh, but, what a pity.
She's 100% certified organic vegetarian.
Good.
Yeah. And she has been taking her iron tablets to keep her iron up, and also vitamin B. 12 and I think something 4. I'm not quite 100% and also, and she's been losing her hair when she has a shower. She's losing a lot of hair. She sees it on the floor, a lot of hair. Now, is there something a herb that she can take other than taking iron tablets or something else?
Sam, the first thing I'd have to ask, of course, is has your dear friend.
Has she
been investigated by her doctor to find out if there is any underlying condition?
Not that I know, no.
She's
perfectly fit and healthy.
Good.
Doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, taken drugs, ever.
Look, I think it would be worthwhile, as you would expect me to say this, and I stand by it. When you've got a condition, even something like this, that's not been investigated, my first recommendation would be to see a good doctor to do the groundwork, the blood work that he might want to do to see if there was any underlying condition. But what I'm going to say now is not meant in any way at all to be offensive. But as a vegetarian, you have to be very, very, very cautious that you are using or taking enough complete protein in your diet. Now, what I suggest is that the first thing that I would do is recommend that your dear friend go to a health food store or a pharmacy and get hold of a protein supplement that is essentially a vegetarian protein supplement. That is a combination of vegetarian substances that contain or are blended to contain adequate levels of complete protein. I think that's your first base. Now, that's not meant to be offensive, because I have great, great regard for vegetarian diets. I practice them myself as a young man. But be cautious. As we get older, our body needs good quality and perhaps a little bit more protein. So the first starting base is not to spend a lot of money on vitamins and minerals at this stage. See the GP, get a protein supplement that is not offensive to your partner's vegetarian dietary. Do that first and see how that goes for a couple of months.
Yes.
If that doesn't work, come back to me and I'll talk to you more about it.
Wonderful. Okay. You're amazing. Amazing.
Thanks for your call, Sam. Good luck with that. And we've got Terry from Gorokin on the line. Terry, you want to talk about prostate issues?
Yeah, I certainly do.
How can I help, Terry?
Lots of ways, Doc. Look, I've had prostate for a little while. I'm on a drug called, I think it's pronounced Duodat. It's a... And I recently went and seen a doctor because I get up 4 or 5 times a night going to the toilet, and there's nothing I can do other than that. Now, I went and seen a urologist about it, and he recommended surgery, and I don't want to get surgery after talking to him because that will create more problems than I think it will cure. Terry, so I'm just wondering if there's anything natural.
Terry, if your urologist has made that recommendation, that needs to be respected. However, if you have the main problem is what we call nocturnal frequency, getting up at night, and you've had that for some time.
Yes, I have.
And the doctor has you on Duodat. Did that do anything?
No, it hasn't done a thing.
Okay. Well, look, I'm not contradicting what your good doctors have recommended or even what your urologist has recommended. Your condition is such that it may require intervention, but my suggestion would be to use or give a trial run on combinations that have the American herb known as saw palmetto, S-A-W-P-A-L-M-E-T-T-O, saw palmetto.
Now, saw palmetto,
And I'm not saying anything other than this herb has a reputation of benefit depending upon the level of problem that a patient has. I suspect yours is probably not a good condition, the level that you're at now, and it would be very optimistic to place too much emphasis on the potential of saw palmetto, but give it a go. It has a good reputation, particularly in the technical herbal literature. It has a quaint definition or a quaint reputation as being a natural catheter. Now, what that means is that it improves the flow, increases the ability of the bladder to empty itself more efficiently. Right. So, in my opinion, and the good thing about it is it's not expensive, it doesn't need a script. If it's going to do anything for you, you may well find that something is indicated within a month or so. But let me just say that in the scheme of things, it's probably the best documented herb. There are many products in the marketplace. I would go to your pharmacist and talk to him and get him to recommend a good quality a product which contains saw palmetto. Now, back to the point that it is probably not likely to do remarkable things, but it might give you some breathing space. It might improve the situation to some degree. But let me say, if your urologist has given you this advice, you must at the end of the day respect that.
Oh, look, I respect his word and his knowledge, and he pulled no punches.
Good.
He just told
That's
it like
good.
It is.
That's good. That's good.
But I shied away from because the end results were, a little bit catastrophic, Like,
look, I have very many patients who go down a similar pathway that I have recommended to you, and many of them find enough benefit to cause them to pause, put it that way.
All right.
Thanks for your call, Terry. All the best with it. Next, we have Eddie from Warrabrook on the line. Hi, Eddie. You want to talk about improving hair loss?
Yes. Good afternoon, lovely peoples. Thank you very much for providing excellent community service, as you always do. Doctor, taking in consideration potential hereditary hair loss and all that goes with it, whether a person has that background in the family or not, what do you suggest are the best methods, apart from doing a blood analysis? What would you look out for in the blood test, and what other herbs or remedies, natural remedies, would you suggest for a person to perhaps slow down the hair loss? And I'm talking about on the head, and also to potentially improve or start or encourage hair growth. And I've looked at a couple of things. I've seen, you know, like some medication that is like blockers or whatever you call them. I think it's testosterone blockers or something along those lines. I'm trying to, and I've checked out some of the things, you know, from the Chinese culture and Japanese culture, more on the herbal and natural side of things. I'm trying to stay away from the pills that are blockers, and I'm trying to just find out from you if there is anything that you suggest on the natural methods, natural process.
Eddie, hair loss is something that's very, very common and very natural in men particularly, and particularly as we get on in life. I by no means have a shock of black hair. I still have some residual hair, which I frequently look in the mirror and cry about, but it's no easy way of solving this problem. What I would suggest is that think about using a supplement that contains silica. Go to your health food store and get hold of products that usually go under the name of skin and hair combinations. They've got a reasonable degree of backing. I would suggest that. I would also suggest that you consider using a topical application based on rosemary shampoo, rosemary massage cream. It has a good reputation. It's very popular. I would try that also. And paradoxically, I've been talking about a herb called saw palmito. Now, some of the indications encourage us to see saw palmito as having a hormonal consequence that does tend to reflect itself in an improvement in hair characteristics. Now, I'll not say anything more than that because I don't want to suddenly be seen to be setting myself up as a hair loss specialist. I guess there are plenty of those already in the marketplace. But that's the sort of way or the sort of thing that I would suggest you look at. It's a common problem. Then maybe not a lot of that you can do about it, Eddie. But if you're really concerned about it, the little things that I've mentioned may give you a bit of encouragement.
Excellent, sir. Thank you very much. As always, greatly appreciated. Wishing you a lovely day.
Thank you, Eddie.
Thanks, Eddie. Bye. And we've got Bruce from Ellie Barner on the line. Hi, Bruce. Thanks for holding.
Thank you very much for taking the call.
That's
Dennis,
right.
I was driving last week when you were talking or responding to a question about sinus irritation.
Yes.
And unfortunately, it's very hard to jot down anything when you're driving.
Okay.
But one of the items was it was a pineapple derivative.
Okay.
And there was something else along with that.
Okay. This is a supplement, Bruce, that I have used for many, many years, usually to reinforce a herbal combination. But on its own, it works very well in the upper respiratory tract, particularly in the sinuses, as we call them. It's a combination of the bioflavonoid, which is called quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, quercetin. Now, quercetin has a multiple group of benefits, particularly in reducing inflammatory activity. And if you like, the environmental factor that seems to encourage sinus infection or sinus discharge, it does also have a significant reputation in natural medicine as being a progressive anti-allergic agent. So they put the two potentials associated with quercetin, the bioflavonoid, and it indicates the potential, in my opinion, to lessen challenges, environmental challenges, viral challenges, by virtue of its anti-inflammatory characteristics. And also it has an anti-allergic factor, which makes it useful in reinforcing the action of bromelain. Now, bromelain was the pineapple enzyme that I mentioned. It combines beautifully with quercetin, but bromelain has more to do with working against mucus congestion. I'm keeping it simple. More against, if you like, congestive conditions. It works against keeping the mucus, if you like, in a free-flowing way other than becoming very thick and producing a lot of infection potential. So it's well known, bromelain. It's, again, a remarkable, let me say, a remarkable substance with many potential benefits, but in the upper respiratory tract, but maybe not also else, but maybe also elsewhere, it works with quercetin. It lessens sinus congestion, whereas quercetin lessens the environmental factors, the allergic potential, and also any other inflammatory activity. So it's a supplement that's easily procured. It's not expensive. But let me just say that if you have an ongoing history of sinus, it would be useful, in my opinion, for you to try a combination of the herb echinacea with the herb golden seal. They are much more, if you like, dealing with infection potential, and golden seal is always renowned as in herbal medicine as a primary remedy for distressing conditions of most mucous membranes of the body. So that's not a bad little approach. It's very safe, very inexpensive. It might take a while to kick in. It's not an acute remedy. But if you've had this as a chronic problem, it would be one of the things, or a combination of things, that I'd recommend to you, Bruce.
Dennis, what the issue that I've got is that when I wake up in the morning, I cough.
Yes.
And what I believe is happening is the mucus from my sinuses is coming down my throat and ending up as congestion on my lungs.
Well, I would see what I've said today as a useful starting point, particularly, however, using the bioflavonoidal approach and the combination with quercetin as a starting base. Give it a little bit of time to work. If it doesn't do the job in a period of time, get back and I'll make a few more simple recommendations. But I would start at that level, Bruce.
Thank you very much, Dennis. As always, you're very informative and very, very knowledgeable, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Bruce.
Thanks a lot, Bruce. Appreciate it. Now, Dennis, we were going to talk about echinacea. You played a vital role in establishing it in Australia. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, look, firstly, let me say that of all the herbs that characterise Western herbalism, it would have to be echinacea that would range as the most important medicinal in the group. And from the very first time I studied herbal medicine, echinacea was number one on the list because its reputation had gone before it. And it was one of the first herbs that I began to use in practice and have used it ever since. It has remarkable properties. It would take me all day to elaborate on it, but a whole 50-year history of prescribing it has allowed me to say that I would not have been able to achieve the benefits in addressing, particularly chronic infections, particularly in children, that I've achieved with echinacea. Echinacea is an American herb. It was made famous by the American Indians. The knowledge was passed on to whites who were interested in American Indian law and medicine, Quakers particularly, the beautiful people that were the first white settlers in the U.S. They studied graciously the knowledge that the Indians passed on to them and gave in turn a lot of the European benefits to the Indians as well. It had that sort of reputation amongst Native Americans, passed on to the Quakers, and from that point onwards in America, it began to be used increasingly. But it was a group of doctors in the 19th century, doctors known as eclectics, who were a group of mainstream doctors that also were utilising a lot of herbs, American herbs, and in particular, echinacea. So the history in more recent times, if you like, goes back to the work of the eclectic medical profession in the US in the 19th century. And, of course, once it began to be used there, it subsequently began to be used in the same way all around the English-speaking world. Even when herbal medicine was temporarily banned in the United States, yes, banned by Parliament, and herbalists were threatened with jail. It's only been in recent decades that a lot of that banning has been stopped. Fortunately, under the British Crown, God bless them, that's why I'm still a monarchist, the Crown sprung to the defence of lay practitioners of medicine, such as herbalists, and good King Henry VIII, remarkable man. He had other faults, of course, but he owed his last days of health, if you like, with his management of his syphilitic leg ulcers to his last wife. And as a result of the benefit that he received from that last wife, he wrote a charter which still stands up as precedental law to protect anywhere there's a country under the crown. The charter given by Henry VIII still has some credibility, certainly hangs in my room. But anyway, it came here and it was being made as a medication for many years, but I had the privilege, great privilege, of working with a professor from this university, the Emeritus Professor Cliff Elliott. When he retired from the university, bought a property at Peachurch at Orchard Road in Arimba, and he sought me out via one of his graduate students. He sought me out and said he wanted to study herbal medicine. And I was teaching herbal medicine at that stage in Sydney and also under my own college, Southern Cross Herbal School. Cliff came and studied as an undergraduate, you might say, sitting in with much younger people who delighted his presence. Cliff became eventually the patron of the Herbalist Association. But he and I grew echinacea on his beautiful little property at Peach Orchard Road, Arimba, and it was actually used as a demonstration garden for potential growers. And as a result of that, Cliff manufactured echinacea tea and sold it quite successfully. And I was also then approached by a Queensland company to become their consultant in developing a range of echinacea products. As far as I'm concerned, as far as I know, this was the first time in Australia that a group of businessmen, farmers from the Darling Downs, got together, formed a company, asked me to be their consultant, grew the herb in magnificent splendour on the Darling Downs, and we produced an echinacea range called Winter Strength Relief. Remarkable product. It validated and popularised the role of echinacea as a particular wintertime remedy to help resist some of the infections associated with wintertime. Did I have something to do with that herb? I certainly did, and I still have a lot to do with it. So I could talk all day about it.
we'll have to talk about that one next week. We've got Margaret from East Maitland on the line. Hi, Margaret. We've got a couple of minutes left. Do you want to talk about chilblains in the fingers?
Yes, my husband's got one finger on each hand rather swollen up with chilblains.
Now, does he has had it for some time?
Yeah, well, it just started probably about a month ago, once the weather started to get cold.
Well, look, what I'm going to say here might sound rather simple, but and I'll preface it by saying that years ago I used to do a radio program in Sydney that would start about 12 o'clock at night and finish at 2 o'clock in the morning and go all over Australia, including Tasmania. And in one midwinter evening, I received a call for a chap in Tasmania who said that wintertime was his nightmare, that his feet and his fingers became ice blocks, and regardless of what he tried to do, there was nothing he could do to overcome this. Did I have any suggestions? I didn't have much time, so I suggested that he use either ginger or cayenne capsules, say a capsule of one or the other, a couple of times a day. Now, it was an off-the-cuff remark, but those two herbs used medicinally can promote an effective improvement in underperfused areas of the peripheries, particularly the feet, but even the fingers. One thing I would suggest you do as a simple trial, do it before we make any other recommendations. Go to your pharmacy or health food store. You've got a good health food store in East Maitland. Go and get some, and you've got a good pharmacy there too. Yeah. Get hold of some capsules of ginger or cayenne. Start taking them, say, one after each meal. See what that does in improving the circulation and the warmth. That's the point. The warmth.
Yes, you get very cold hands cold feet.
That's, and this is what I'm saying. Yes. These herbs, and I mentioned this before on this program, these herbs are known as circulatory stimulants.
Okay.
Now, they have no ability to clash with mainstream cardiovascular medication.
Yeah, because he's on Lamotrigine for...
Yes. My history of using these two, well, they're basically foods.
Yes.
These two foods is that they address conditions of the cold extremities. It's worthwhile giving it a go, Margaret.
Definitely. Something very simple and more so natural than anything else.
Give it a go.
All right. Thanks very much, Dennis. We love the show. Thank you.
Good on you.
Thank you. Bye. And we're almost at the end of the show today, Dennis.
Dear.
You've been talking a lot about echinacea. Just quickly, can that help with skin problems?
Look, it is a member normally of a team of other herbs. It's usually combined where one is, say one is dealing with pustular problems. Usually it's combined with the herb golden seal. And it can work particularly well there, not as an acute remedy. It's not something to take the place of an antibiotic if necessary, but what it can do is have a progressive effect that lessens the eruption on the skin. Put it this way. I remember, I'll finalise on this point, I remember years ago teaching, I've done a lot of that, helping or prescribing for or treating a patient from Stockton who could not beat recurring boils. I put him on a medication that incorporated, as I would expect, as you would expect, echinacea with some golden seal. That was the one thing that broke through his years and years of recurrent boils. So there's an example of where echinacea can be useful.
Wonderful. Well, we'll talk more about that next week. Okay. Dennis Stewart, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Health Naturally to NURFM.